Paul Ekman is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell was going to, he was going to say something, but may I just one moment here? You talk about things being destructive and constructive. Is that really the point of your work, is that we should be able to engage the emotions that, simple, that the way you describe them, are inherent to us, that they are part of us? It's not other from.
All emotions are essential to life. They give life its juice, its purpose. They motivate us. But they can all be destructive as well as constructive.
And the goal is to optimize one and minimize the other?
Absolutely. And Aristotle said that the intemperate person had three possibilities. There were three manifestations of being intemperate. One is the wrong emotion. Emotion just doesn't fit the situation. That can happen, and it's very interesting. Why in the world would that ever happen? I'll come back to that. The second is the right emotion, but it's too intense. Or it's not intense enough. So the third is the right emotion for the situation at the right intensity, but it's expressed in the wrong way.
This is Aristotle?
This is Aristotle. Yes, there's nothing new in this world.
So it took 2,500 years for you to come along and start putting the science around this?
Well, and to try to provide practical ideas. First of all, to elaborate, why does this happen? Because I'm one of those who think you can't really make changes unless you understand. You know, I learned to sail a boat by reading a book.
You did?
Yes. And I'm one of those dinosaurs, when I get a computer program, I read the instructions.
Wow.
Now, I know that people of my daughter's generation, they never would think of reading the instructions. Just get in and do it, okay? They find it. They learn it that way. And you can do it that way also. But I try to provide an understanding and then specific steps you can take on all of these things. Because, again, the emotions, they're not instincts. They're not reflexes. They're much more complicated than that, but consciousness's awareness typically doesn't play a large role, and so we don't have the ability to exercise choice unless we work to develop that ability. We can work to develop that ability, and that's living life in an emotionally skillful way.
But it's always in the setting of your moods and temperaments.
It always is. Now, moods and temperaments both differ from emotions. Moods differ in at least two interesting ways. One is that they last a lot longer. And the second is you never know why you're in a particular mood. Just wake up that way. And moods bias you. They predispose you towards a particular emotion. If you're in an irritable mood, you're looking for a chance to get angry. If you wake up and you're in an irritable mood, the best thing to do is go for a walk in the woods. Never speak to another person that day. If you need to speak to a person that day, warn them, hey, I'm in an irritable mood. I'm going to probably, it's really, let's not deal with anything difficult because I'm, you know, I've got both hands tied behind my back today. From my vantage point, moods are of no use whatsoever. We'd be better off without them, but we've got them. So the best thing to do is to know when you're in an... Now, if you're in a euphoric mood, the only problem is you might buy yourself a car you can't afford. You know, you might be a real sucker because you're going to think, oh, of course I'll be able to do that, because you're going to overestimate and you're going to be overly optimistic about the future and your capacity and everything. So generally, moods, a lot of trouble. Temperament... Well, a large component of temperament is our emotional style or profile. And there isn't much we can do to change that other than to be aware of it and to recognize. Let's suppose I'm a person, not too far from the truth, a person who has fast rather than slow emotional responses and strong rather than moderate. Well, that's going to be harder for me to regulate my emotional behavior. Not impossible, but if I had slower responses and they were more moderate, I'd have an easier time with it. However, my system is well designed for dealing with dangerous, fast-changing situations, because bango, I'm there.
Is that genetics?
probably largely genetics. I say probably because not all the evidence is in, but I think most people who do science in this area would think that it is to a fair extent genetics. Now, everything gets influenced. Nothing is totally genetics. So everything gets influenced by the environment you grow up in and what things are encouraged and discouraged, etc.
There's another notion that you mentioned that I'd simply not come across anywhere else, that sort of goes to this interface between the conscious and the emotional, and that's the notion of this refractory period.
That is refractory.
Yes.
And the almost total control that you don't have, that your conscious mind doesn't have, and the fact that as you describe it, you can't be rational, that you start looking for, that when you see something rationally, you will translate it or interpret it in a fashion to support the emotion that you're feeling.
Right. When emotion first begins, then there is a refractory period you can think of as a filter, and it filters how you're going to perceive the world, how you're going to interpret what's happening in a way that supports the emotion, and it even filters the knowledge stored in your own memory banks that you can retrieve. You can only retrieve the things that fit that emotion, not the things that contradict it. Now, that can be very useful because it really helps getting everything mobilized and focused. Think of it as a focusing where everything that's irrelevant is discarded. It's not useful if it lasts more than a few seconds.
Because
you're not then going to be able to see things that disconfirm or offer alternatives.
And
so you would really like to have very short refractory periods.
So the psychotherapist in you, what does that mean? Give me an example of that.
Of having a short refractory period?
No, of what happens if it goes too long.
If it goes too long, then you are condemned.
So I get mad.
Is this something like arguing with your wife?
Maybe there are rational arguments with your wife. There are irrational disagreements. Argument implies that you're disagreeing in a way that, with anger, and where the anger is directed towards getting back or harming in some way, insulting, disparaging. While disagreement doesn't imply any of that. So I think, of course you're going to have disagreements with your wife. The issue is how to disagree in a skillful way. By that I mean in a way that might bring about change, or at least might be listened to. In an unskillful way, might make you feel better at the moment. I got her. But it's going to come back to haunt you. Because if you hurt the other person, and anger often leads us to do things that hurt others, then very unlikely, unless the person's scared of you, they're very unlikely to make any of the changes you're looking for. Change isn't easy under any circumstance, but it's only reached when you can disagree and consider your disagreements after the anger. The anger is good because it'll raise for you, I really don't like what's going on. I want to change.
Which is important information.
It's very important information to you and to your partner. And then what's important to do is say, okay, we're going to deal with this on Friday when we have our once-a-week meetings to deal with this.
Well, it's part of why this refractory is such an important notion, because the fact that you just can't get good information if you're in that state, right, and that you contaminate everything that comes in, both your memories and also anything that somebody says to you, it's very dangerous.
Now, it's my supposition, for which I don't have any proof, but it certainly fits what most people believe who work in the psychotherapeutic field, which I don't, and that is that the refractory period, although they don't have that concept, but that it would last a relatively short period, seconds, unless you're bringing into the situation something that you're importing to the situation, past history that doesn't belong there. Now, if you've got a backlog of resentments, oh, there she's going again, and you're off and onto it, then you're going to have a much longer refractory period. If you are bringing into it something from your earlier family life, unsettled matters in your own family life, that's going to lengthen the refractory period, and it's going to be much more likely you're going to engage in behavior that you're going to regret afterwards.
This is Dr. Paul Ekman. When we come back, can I ask you some more questions?
Absolutely.
This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell is here. Paul Ekman is our guest. He is the author of Emotions Revealed, as well as a lifetime of other vitally important work. We trust you'll be with us when we return.